And I have a very good sense when I'm in an environment where I'm with somebody who's dangerous. And I can tell you that Mendocino and Lametti are extremely dangerous human beings.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Feature. And I'm your host, Barry Bussey. With me today, we have Tom Erazzo, who's continuing our conversation about his new book. You'll be able to find this book on Amazon or wherever good books are sold. The People's Emergency Act, Freedom Convoy 2022. And Tom, it's a great pleasure to have you with us on this program.
Thanks for having me back, Barry. It's been too long.
You know, Tom, Yeah, I know. I tell you, it's just been awesome to just touch base with you on this. You know, looking back, well, first of all, there's a lot of things we want to talk about. And on our last program, we want to get to the four horsemen of the liberal apocalypse, which I think is just so awesome. But, you know, that phrase is like gravitated me as I read that. But we'll get to that. But first, let's talk about the importance of your book, the importance of Tamara's book, the importance of your book. What do you have to say to the Canadian people on these?
I think there is still a very large population of Canadians that vilify the convoy because they are large consumers of the mainstream media. And a really good friend of mine, Chris Vandenbos, he's one of the founders of an organization called Police on Guard for Thee. We did a Twitter space the other night, and he had said to me, or said in the space, he said, you know, to an audience, it was a fairly large audience. I think at one point we had up to 2,000 people had watched it or listened to the Twitter space. Wow. And Chris said, and I'm not saying this because I'm trying to promote the book, but it was an important thing that he said. He said, purchase the book, read the story for yourself, but buy more than one copy when the paperback or whatever comes out and give it to your friends and family that were against the convoy. Give it to people that don't know anything about it, but they still vilify it and they're not sure why. But get the conversation going and get it to them, you know, let them read it, let them find out. Whether you get my book or Tamara's book or Andrew Lawton's book or Tom Quiggin's book, but get it and get the other side of the story. Kim Kennedy has one too. She and her daughter lived in her car, not in her car. I think she was there in a hotel, but she was with her daughter and she wrote a wonderful book as well. So the books are coming out from different perspectives, but you know, every day I still get called all sorts of nasty things on social media, vilifying the convoy. But this is what I would challenge those people to do. Go and read one of the books. Get the first-hand account. Understand why so many people supported this convoy. And the proof that they supported the convoy is the fact that, you know, on two occasions, the convoy raised $10 million. And all across Canada, from coast to coast, there was Canadians lining bridges everywhere supporting this convoy. Why? What is it that all those people know that the anti-convoy people don't? And this is an opportunity to read one of our books and learn about it from firsthand, why we were there, what we were trying to do, who did we talk to, what was the government's action, what was the relationship between us and the police like? You know, is it really true? Did somebody desecrate the Terry Fox? No. What happened with the National War Memorial? Well, it's in there. Let's talk. Who's James Topp? You know, let's talk about the 15% of Canadians. You know, 15%, 6 million Canadians didn't take the injection. What is their story? Right. You know, like, we're a very, very divided, ugly country right now. And I think for 2 years prior to the convoy, Canadians who chose not to participate in the experiment were very respectful, very tolerant, you know, took a lot of abuse by their friends, family, coworkers, the government, the prime minister. We took a lot of abuse and we were private, or we were polite. We were very respectful. But we're now over 3 years into this and we're still seeing people calling for mask mandates and all sorts of stuff. It's like, okay, you know what? We were patient. We were respectful. Now you're going to sit down and listen to us, because after 3.5 years of this nonsense, we're not playing your game anymore. You're going to start listening to what we have to say, because your way didn't work, because now you're up to your sixth shot and you still want me to wear a mask. Like, when does it end? When does the fear end? And if you believe in the experimental injection you took, why are you wearing a mask if you're protected? Why do you want to lock me down? Why are you so afraid of it when you're the one supposedly protected? But why do you want to impact my life? What is my, what's Tom Morazzo's grievance and motivation to get involved in this convoy as a former military officer? You know, from mine, people would be surprised to learn it's not necessarily about the pandemic. From my point of view, it was about the fact that we had an organization, the Emergency Management Ontario, and every province and territory has one. We had laws that protected Canadians against government overreach to this specific magnitude in this specific circumstance. And all of our rights were violated. All of our laws were pushed aside. Mm-hmm. And that for me was the big motivator. It wasn't so much about COVID and masks. It was about the fact that we knew that this was always a possibility. We have had six endemics or pandemics in the last 150 years. We had contingency plans. We had military plans. We had organizations set up specifically to deal with this. And all of those things were cast aside, and they put doctors in charge of the entire country. And there was too many wrong things that happened. And I want to know why the ordinary Joe, who doesn't agree with the convoy, doesn't want to pull back the curtain and see what the other side is. And so, you know, these books that all of us have written afford people an opportunity to get our perspective, to learn about us. Why is it that we did what we did? You know, and that's an important thing. This is why these books need to happen.
I think it also goes to show the staying power of the convoy. In fact, I maintain that the convoy was a pivotal moment in the political history, the social history of Canada. And I think we are seeing, even now, even politicians now, conservative politicians, are now using, analogies or virtue signaling that, you know, they were supporting, you know, the truckers, or are now supporting the truckers, even in the conservative convention that was held just recently. There was a reference to the truckers, and of course the entire people rose up and were clapping and all of that kind of thing, where, you know, it's great excitement with the truckers. So suddenly I think the tide is changing, in my estimation, of the common sense experience of the truckers, the truckers who represent common sense in so many ways, were like, you know, they're not going to be putting up with this anymore. And so they drive to Ottawa. And I think this thing is carrying on. And even though the Prime Minister invoked the Emergencies Act, to me, it was kind of like dark humor, in the sense that the Nero, the one in charge of the country, has so overreacted. It's almost... Mm-hmm. It is like a dark humor. It's like, you know, it's way overdone. It's comedic. I mean, it's just incredible. And so I think people have recognized that, and I think in increasing numbers, but we do have that very strident group who are maintaining, even in the press, I've seen it, where, you know, well, you know, you don't pay any attention to that person because they've supported the convoy. And so having your book, having Tamara's book, having Lawton's Andrew Lawton's book, having the other books that you mentioned is so important for all of us to say, hey, let's take a peek. You know, you're so angry or you're so visceral in your response towards the convoy. Well, let's listen to them. Let's see what they have to say. And you know, throughout history, we've had many examples of individuals who, and not individuals, but even groups of people who stood up for a particular cause and were vilified at the beginning. But as time went on and people got a chance to listen to what they had to say, suddenly they eventually become heroes. And we've got numerous of examples of that. And so I think it's extremely important for people like you to put it in writing. That to me is key because it now puts a stake in the ground and says, hey, take a look.
Yeah, well, they say the victor writes the history books.
Winston Churchill said that history will treat him kind because he will write it. And so it's that kind of thing.
That's good. Yeah. But I in this particular case, we all in the digital age that we all have an opportunity to write the history books. And so our side is out. The government will put their side. I know there's a law professor, I believe, from University of Ottawa, who put his version of it out. And I don't know if he's a law professor. I know he's one of the academics in, I believe, in Ottawa. I came across his book the other day on Amazon, but his is focusing on the fact that the convoy attracted right-wing extremism, which is
okay.
Absurd, but you know, let the readers decide. Like, let's put them all out, and as long as we're not censoring and burning books, you know, people are going to gravitate towards the truth that they want to find. And I think it'll be good for historians, and you know, 100 years from now, to look back and say, okay, somewhere in the middle, there's some truth here. Let's kind of define our nation's history based on all of these different samples that people have provided to Canada. And that's my hope. But I'm glad that I participated, and I'm glad that I wrote this book, but it's important for me that people realize that this was never a project about how great Tom Morazzo was and all the great decisions he made. It was, I wanted to show all of the warts that, you know, I could, but maintain sort of a balance between, I didn't want to vilify people on our side because some of our people did things that I disagreed with. And I did things that some people also disagreed with. So to be fair, I wanted to talk about the things that were controversial. Some of those decisions, my own personal failure to follow up on a couple of really key things. For example, the Roadmap to Freedom document that was produced, Tamara gave it on a live stream. I was led to believe that it was being sent the moment that Tamara started speaking on the live stream, that all 336 members of parliament were going to get a copy of it, only to find out that the person who said that actually lied to me. Right. And so this created a different problem for all of us that we had to solve, you know. And as an example, the Roadmap to Freedom in that time was a brilliant document written by Keith and with Eva's involvement, and I think some other people. But it was a brilliant document that should have been published to the public the first week we were there. Right. But we all had other concerns we were dealing with. And so I wanted, and one of the issues is because the MOU became, filled that vacuum.
Right.
That we had, right? And unfortunately, that was the wrong message. I write a chapter about the MOU, and I think it's an important chapter that I've gone back and forth on a lot of the details with some other people and, you know, Keith and we've talked about it. It's important to the book, but it's not important to the overall intent of the convoy. But we, you know, as the public need to look at the situation involving the MOU. You know, people are so polarized around the idea of the MOU, but they don't know what the MOU even was. It was just these, these sound bites that the media created, a guy like Evan Solomon created, you know, where he was saying, okay, well, these unelected officials tried to overthrow the government with an MOU and have them all resign and stuff. It's like, you didn't even read it. That's completely false. Yeah. And I'd like to know, I'd really, really like to know how in a country like Canada, you can overthrow the government with registered mail.
Yeah.
Making a legal request to the Governor General to do something that you believe is actually a mechanism within government, and send it to them registered mail. Mm. And if you read that thing, there's no "or else," there's no threat in that letter. If you don't do this, we're going to storm, you know, nothing. It's a request that the Governor General take action on our behalf. And it's not illegal to ask the government to do something. Right. And this is what people don't understand about the MOU. I get hit on this all the time through social media about the MOU. And, you know, it was two truckers that wrote that, not lawyers, not constitutional scholars, but it was two Canadians who believed in this country and thought that they were triggering an actual legal mechanism within our government. And they worked hard on it and they were sincere, but they were lawful and they were peaceful and there was no threat. Mm-hmm. But that story never gets told. Right. The Evan Solomons of the media world will never tell that story because it doesn't fit in with what their viewers want to hear. So here we are.
Yeah. And it doesn't sell. Right. So, exactly. And, you know, one of the things you point out, and I alluded to this in our last segment, you've got the four horsemen of the liberal apocalypse. I wonder if you could just explain that to our listeners as they are thinking, my word, this is right out of the book of Revelation, Tom. What do you mean by that? And that's awesome.
I had never been in the room personally with, you know, Justin Trudeau, Chrystia Freeland, Mendocino, and Lametti. I'd never been in the room before personally. Mm. But I sat there in the audience and during the Public Order Emergency Commission when each of them testified. And, you know, I'm not intimidated by many things. But I felt truthfully when Lametti was up on the stand testifying, I got a real chill up my spine about him. I couldn't get over the almost bloated, hubris smirk off of, you know, Mendocino's, his attitude, his demeanor, the look on his face. Like it was a game to these guys. Like we were ants. And I rarely in my life, listen, I grew up in a very, very rough neighborhood in Niagara Falls. You know, I joined the military. I trained for years in the rapid application of violence. And I have a very good sense. I've done martial arts my entire life. And I have a very good sense when I'm in an environment where I'm with somebody who's dangerous. And I can tell you that Mendocino and Lametti are extremely dangerous human beings. And I'm saying that not because they're in government, but I'm saying that because I know when I'm around somebody who is harmful, is a dangerous person. And Freeland, different thing, but she has more power, more influence, more control. And then Justin Trudeau, you know, you put these two together, and I would say that these four are really the architects of ruin in this country. And When I listened to the testimony and I listened to the language and I observed the body language and listened to the inflection in the voice and in just their whole demeanor, I knew that with those four being in the four most powerful positions within Canadian government, I really felt like these four matched the definition of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. I'm not going to allude too much on Jagmeet Singh. He is the fifth, I would argue, probably the most powerful Canadian right now. More powerful than Justin Trudeau in the fact that if it wasn't for Jagmeet Singh, Trudeau's government would fall. But I on a personal level, watching these people get up on the stand, the four of them, I knew that Canada was in danger. I read psychology on, you know, I've read The Gift of Fear. I've done threat assessment training. I have done all of this stuff, the psychological factors of the prediction of violence. And I can tell you there's something off about these four, but in like specifically Mendocino and Lametti, there is something psychologically off about these two. And that is really where I started to, and then I, in the book, I start to look at their testimony in the things that they're saying. But I look at the Liberal Party as a whole, and it's shocking to me, even to this day, the rhetoric that comes out of some of their mouths, like the new guy, the new health minister. This guy's it amazes me. It amazes me that Canada has elected these people continuously. They don't see, the Canadian Liberals don't see the hypocrisy.
So when you say that they're dangerous, I mean, obviously that's, you know, in your opinion, you see this as a sense that you received as you were listening to their testimony. Are you able to give us examples, or is that just something you just have a sense that there's something here that is very concerning? I guess I'm just trying to unpack that a little bit because I've often thought about the fact that, for example, we know that the Prime Minister had very little time for Jody Wilson-Raybould, and we have her story, and we have her, in essence, testimony of the truth of the matter, and then so her replacement, Mr. Lametti, has been able to do what the Prime Minister has wanted him to do, and seems like he has no compunction, no concern about it, and has carried out what the Prime Minister has requested. And then, you know, it is rather odd in, you know, the last cabinet shuffle that he's been put aside for now, at least. Has no idea what would happen if there's a new Liberal government, but there is this. I mean, obviously the country is in a bad state of affairs right now. But as you look at the future and you look at the impact that the convoy has had on this country, how do you sense this all being resolved, or how is the convoy, in your view? And the lessons we've learned. Let's have a look at the lessons. What are the lessons that we can obtain from this experience that would help us to resolve this angst, this sense of, hey, there's something off with these people?
Yeah, and it's a great question because it is so multifaceted. There's not a singular answer to this question because, you know, I too struggled with months later after the convoy, like, what did we ultimately accomplish? Because the government didn't even negotiate in any terms, and negotiate's a terrible word, but they didn't even engage in any dialogue, right? There was no conversation between us and the government, you know? And so when, you know, that's an issue right there. And But I look at the net effect of it. I believe if the convoy had not gone to Ottawa, I believe that the government of Canada and probably the premiers would have become much, much more tyrannical. I believe that when you look at Lametti as an example, if you listen, this is what I would suggest to a viewer if they really want to know. Go back in history and look at some old video of Hermann Göring and Mengele. Go back and look at some of the video of them. Then go back and look at the testimony at the Public Order Emergency Commission and watch specifically, because it's still up on the website, specifically watch the testimony of Mendocino and Lametti. And then keep Göring in mind. Keep Mengele in mind. There is something about these guys, and that is my personal opinion. Okay. And like I said, I have studied martial arts. I teach people, I do an Israeli martial arts called Krav Maga, and I study a lot of the predictive science about being in a threatening situation. I have done, with school boards, not like as a trainee, as a student learning how to do threat assessments for people that are considering doing violence. And I can tell you, not as a psychologist, but as a person who has studied violence, that they have an extremely they may not be the people that commit the actual violence with a weapon themselves, but those two certainly would have absolutely no compunction whatsoever about ordering the violence against fellow Canadians based on, what we saw historically, how the Liberal government conducted themselves during the beginning of the lockdowns and the pandemic in all of the mandates that they helped impose on the Canadian people. I, in the room with these guys during the commission, I felt a deep sense of unease being actually in their presence. And I've never said that. You know what? I've never actually admitted that to anybody before. I've never spoken publicly about this. I don't even think I've told anybody about this. But I think, what does that convoy mean? The convoy was the one thing in this country that was able to stop these people from going forward with on the trajectory that they were heading. These four individuals, they were on, and a couple more, but I think the trajectory that they were heading on was stopped by the convoy. And I think that's an important thing. Does it mean they're going to give up and roll over and come up with a new thing? No, absolutely. I don't think they will for a minute. I think this cabinet shuffle was by design. I think that given the right opportunity, the government will take the suspension off of their mandates, because they never stopped it. They suspended it. I think they will have no issues whatsoever of reenacting some of these ridiculous mandates. But what it does mean for Canadians is that Canadians who felt alone prior to the convoy now realize they are not alone. That is a guarantee. There are millions of Canadians that are on their side. And so that's the other thing that has signaled to the people who felt alone: you're not alone. There are many Canadians that are there, and they've got your back. So this is the two things. It stopped them temporarily, but it also signaled to the public, I'm not alone. I've got help. And if you look on social media, they've been rumors about mask mandates and signaling through the media and all that stuff. People are like, I'm not playing your game again. Go ahead and bring it back. And like the expression is, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Right? And that's what's going to happen.
Well, that's very powerful. As you're talking there about those two gentlemen, and I think it was those two gentlemen that were talking about, were they not, about sending in tanks, and they said it was all a big joke. What you're saying is, okay, I've heard a lot of people say, well, yeah, well, it's only a joke, but they deep down really mean it.
Yeah.
And so this puts a different spin on what we've heard, and that they were joking about. Wow.
Yeah, and if you were to look at the smug look on their face, they had no attachment to what it was. You know, they have no emotional connection or attachment to what they did to Canadians during the lockdowns. And that was very evident during their commission. I mean, they thought that the rest of us were absolutely insane and that we should have just followed them because they're so benevolent. And they couldn't understand why the rest of the country just didn't get in line with what they wanted. It's like, because maybe you don't understand what it is you've done. You live in this ivory tower and maybe you're too disconnected from the consequence of your stupid policies.
Right. And that's what makes them dangerous, because they just don't understand what they've done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You know, Tom, I see that our time is gone again. This has been a very powerful conversation. And I just want to, again, emphasize to the people who are watching, putting up for those of you who are listening on Spotify, or you'll see we have here a picture of the book cover. It's Emergency Act, Freedom Convoy 2022 by Tom Morazzo. It's an excellent read, a fast read. It's extremely important to get a copy so that you can understand exactly from the inside as to what was happening, what the different players, the tensions that were going on in between there, the things that were happening between the convoy leaders and the police and so forth, and what everyone was thinking. And so I think it's extremely important. And even if there are those of you who are watching this program and you say, hey, listen, I got no time for the convoy. In fact, I had some people say, you know, if they see a Canadian flag on the back of a pickup truck, you know, it makes them nervous. Well, pick up a copy of Tom's book and just give it an honest read and see if that makes you nervous. Tom, one of the things you said in the book, and I'm going to close with this thought, and you said the most important thing, the most important title that you've ever had in life is that you're a father. When you step back and you look at that experience, being with the convoy, what does it mean to you as a father, having gone through the convoy 2022?
Many Canadians have left Canada, and many Canadians have considered leaving Canada. Unfortunately, just through circumstance of life, I don't have custody of my children. And, you know, I see my children, great relationships. Everything is very, very solid that way. But I'm never going to leave the future of my children to a government that has no respect for the citizens' rights that we apparently are inalienably born with. And so I'm never going to abandon my children today, and I am certainly never going to abandon their future. And that's an important thing to me, because I'm not fighting for just today. And we saw, you know, at the height of the lockdowns in places like Quebec, where they were talking about, you know, I remember watching a video in Quebec where there was police guarding a grocery store demanding a vax pass for people to get food. This is how close we came to all out repeat of the Jewish experience with the Nazis. I am not going to abandon my children today, and I am never going to allow a free and democratic country like Canada to devolve into that level of tyranny and fascism and eventually communism while I still have a breath. And that is only because of my children. That has nothing to do with me personally. It is for the future of my kids that I will fight to my last dying breath. And that's all it is to me. I don't care about the other stuff. I don't care what happens to me. It's my children. And that's all that matters.
Wow. Well said. Any final thought as we close our program?
Be vigilant and keep an eye on the actions of the government. And if ever there has been a time in your life to start paying attention to politicians and their actions, it is absolutely now. We're in this situation because we abdicated our responsibility to elected officials, and we took our eye off of them. And we created the problem because of complacency, and I'm included in that. And we allowed them to get to the point where they are today without any public check and balances. We expected that, you know, we have checks and balances within the institutions of our society, and we have all come to learn that that is just not so. That every institution within our society failed the public grotesquely, and now it's up to us to hold them all accountable and to keep an eye on all of their actions and to make sure they're acting within the public's best interest instead of somebody else's.
Okay, well said. And I think if there's anything that the convoy has taught is that very point. The Canadians have been known to be very, showed a lot of deference over the years towards its government. There was always the idea that Canada, the Canadian people were interested in, as long as you could have, you know, peace, good order of government. You know, I guess it's the POG clause of the Constitutional Act of 1867, which is peace, order, and good government, that Canadians would support such a government, and had the idea that government had their back. And I think what we've learned is that when it came to the Trucker Freedom Convoy, that the government did not show peace, order, and good government, but the exact opposite. And so it's something that I think the scales ought to be removed from our eyes, and that it's extremely important for us to be vigilant, and because that is the price that we have to pay for freedom. And Tom, I want to thank you so much for writing this book. I want to thank you for sharing some thoughts that you've never expressed before. And it's very powerful, very sobering, but something that I think we have to keep in mind as we go forward. And the stakes were very high, still are high. And so you have done us all a good service in putting together your story. And again, I say thanks.
Thanks, Barry. I really appreciate you bringing me on again.
And folks, I want to thank you for being with us today to hear this presentation about Tom's book. And I'll just put it up there again for you. The People's Emergency Act, Freedom Convoy 2022. Make sure you get a copy for yourself and read the inside story about what happened. Don't pay attention to the mainstream media and their twisting of things, but instead go to the primary source. Get Tom's book, get Tamara Leach's book, get Andrew Lawton's book, and yes, get my book eventually when it comes out. Encourage you to get a feel of what's happening here in this country. Learn the lessons of the convoy. And until next time, I'm Barry Bussey. The fight for freedom consists not only in the legal battles in court, but also in the battle of ideas at the universities and in the media. It takes time, effort, and money to keep on top of the debates for freedom. Your donation allows us to keep fighting for all Canadians. firstfreedoms.ca